We got a generation of children, oh Lord, help me preach right here, that have no confidence in their dad. Because they have watched dad play the part of a, let me give you a King James word, hypocrite. Literally, it means they've watched dad wear a mask. And the mask that he wears on Sunday that looks good to the class that he teaches or the board that he serves on, that's not the same thing that they see behind the mask. Guys, let me just say this. There's going to come a time in our life, and I want every man in this room, if you're keeping notes, to write it down, that we got to stop making excuses. Well, I work. I've got this. We got to stop making excuses. Number two, we got to deny our selfishness. Stop living for ourselves. And understand, as I'm going to show you in a moment, God has put you in a pivotal place, in a pivotal time in history to be a difference maker. And as long as you are living for yourself, you'll never be the man that God wants you to be. Number three, you got to stop missing God's blessings. And number four, guys, we have to determine some priorities. What is a godly man? He's a man who centers his entire life on God and God's way. By introduction, I want to give you the foundation of biblical manhood, and I believe it could be summed up in the words of the Apostle Paul, where he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 13, he says, "Watch ye, stand fast in the faith. Quit you like men and be strong." In other words, guys, listen, if there's anything that ought to happen in our life, we ought to be spiritual men who act like men, who have enough strength and fortitude to guard what God has given us and be the spiritual leaders of our home. They say that it's not tough to be spiritual. I say that any wimp can go with the flow of society. I believe with every fiber of every being that is within me that the toughest thing you'll ever do is to show your children and your family that you are a man of God. I believe that one of the toughest things you'll ever do to prove how good you are is to not be afraid to worship God in front of your kids, is to never be afraid to pick up a Bible and to lead your family and to pray with your family. It takes a man's man to be a spiritual man. The foundation of biblical manhood is that we stand fast in the faith. The focus of biblical manhood, I believe, is in 1 Kings chapter 2. I love this. I read it the very first week of our study together out of the second chapter. David is about to die. And as he comes down to the end of his life, it's the imparting words of a father to his son. And he says in verse number 2, in 1 Kings chapter number 2, David offers these words to Solomon as he's laying there on his deathbed. He looks at Solomon and he says, "Listen to me, son." He said, "I am about to go the way of all the earth." That is, I'm about to die. And if I could give you one word of encouragement, he doesn't tell him how to build a palace. He doesn't tell him how to build a temple. He doesn't tell him how to build a name for himself. He doesn't tell him how to accumulate wealth. He doesn't tell him how to stay healthy. He looks at his son and he says, "Listen, I'm going the way of the earth." He said, "But this is what you need to do, Solomon. Be thou strong and show thyself a man."
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever and wherever you may be listening. This is Southern Gospel Point of View. I have got Mr. Reggie Taylor on the line up in Sevierville, Tennessee, and a special guest, the Right Reverend Dr. Justin Pratt from Clear Springs Baptist Church. Justin, how are you doing, sir?
I'm wonderful, Jamie. How are you guys?
Reggie, I'll let you answer that.
I'm too blessed to be depressed, my friend. That's how we roll around here.
There you go. I'll let you have it, my friend. Well, Justin, let me just say first, it is great to have you. It's been a while since we have had any special guests, and we kind of want to just dive right in and talk about some very important things, but then talk about just some vague things. You know, we'll speak about the gospel, and we'll speak about gospel music. I hope we can speak about maybe some Tennessee football. That would be wonderful as well, if you're at liberty to talk about that. But last Sunday morning, I listened to you preach on my way home from Tennessee, and you preached the blessing of becoming a better man. Now, first, just let me ask you to kind of break the ice. Did you steal that from anybody?
Man, it just came right from my heart and God's word.
Okay,
we've kind of been in a man movement here at our church over the last 2.5-3 months.
Okay,
and so it really was just the outflow of the overflow of what God has been doing in my heart. We'll talk a little bit about a Better Man seminar that we recently just did here at our church. That was a 10-week program that we started with 211 men on Monday nights for an hour and a half, and we graduated 207 out of the 211.
Wow.
That completed the program. And so that was kind of a culmination, a summary. We finished that on October the 17th. And what you heard was a message that I followed up at the end of that, which was considered our graduation Sunday.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm just going to tell you, and I told Reggie to be sure to listen to it. I'm pretty sure he did. But Brother Justin, I'm telling you what, man, that challenged me. And I wasn't there. I wasn't part of that 211, but I was one in the truck going south on 75. And it was tremendous. Absolutely a blessing.
Thank you.
So in that message, do what?
You're good. Keep going. I'm trying to find something.
Okay. So in that message, you talked a little bit about your personal heritage. And, you know, Reggie and I talked about that. It was, you know, that was very interesting. And I wonder if you could share, I know you probably, you know, weren't prepared for this, but I wonder if you could share a little bit about that story of the land that was purchased and how it was used. Is that still fresh that you could share that a little bit?
Yeah. So probably 6-7 years ago, I began to become enamored with, I've always loved history, but I started delving into a little more personal history, just wanting to know a little bit more about my own family heritage.
Yeah.
And so what wasn't the logical for me, I just kind of took what I knew about my forefathers, my dad, my grandfather, and I was very fortunate to know my great grandfather up until the time that I was 18 years old. He died when I was 18. And so, you know, a lot of men don't get to know their great grandfather for that long. Yeah. It's just not, that's not normal. And so I subscribed to ancestry.com and just started running Family Heritage. And I didn't know that, man, it would just start pinging information from everywhere imaginable. And so, I just was able to run my generation all the way back. I'm the 11th Pratt in America from my direct descendants. Mm. My boys are the 12th. And I memorized it. I found what I could about every, I would literally take weeks at a time and I would learn about those individual men as much as I could. Obviously, there's a lot of them in there that it's pretty limited, but I was able to find, especially going back to like the 1840s and 50s, just prior to the Civil War, I was able to find a lot of interesting information about my family, specifically a guy who you're referencing by the name of Matthias. Matthias Pratt was the son of David Pratt, who came from King George County, Virginia. That's where the Pratts kind of settled in, was in King George County. And 4 or 5 generations were there. David Pratt, ironically, I didn't use this illustration, but you'll find it interesting. David Pratt met a friend by the name of Stephen Holston. David Pratt was a farmer. Stephen Holston was, I guess you'd call him a navigator. He had built a boat and he had got on what was known as the Cherokee River. And he had made a journey on the Cherokee River, came back to King George County, told David Pratt, the way I understand the story is, listen, there's a place that you could bring your farming goods to, we could sell them, and you could make some money. So David Pratt puts his crops, whatever they were, beans, corn, I don't know. He puts them on this, you know, and we're talking early 1800s. Okay. So David Pratt puts his crops on this boat, gets on the Cherokee River. They float the Cherokee River. They wind up in a place called Straw Plains, Tennessee, or wow. Granger County in that area. They didn't consider something, and that was because the boat was not, it wasn't driven by a motor. You can't float upstream. So they literally tore the boat apart, sold the lumber, walked. They took months and months and months. When David got back, he told his family that he had found a new place that he wanted to go. So they got with Stephen Holston, brought his family down. Ironically, Stephen Holston was the first guy to ever navigate the Cherokee River, which is now known as the Holston River.
Wow.
And so David Pratt settled in Straw Plains, Tennessee, eventually would have a son by the name of Matthias. This is where the story gets interesting, because Matthias, in the meantime, I had preached a little bit about this, and a guy had heard it online and sent me a book, and I had that book. I don't know if you watch the live stream or just listen. It's literally like 900 pages long, thick book, and I have not read the whole book. I just got to my direct descendants, and that's where it tells the story of Matthias. And because it was Civil War history, there was documentation that allowed me to be able to track that down. He went to Camp Nelson in Kentucky. Obviously, a lot of people that know Civil War history know that Knox County and Eastern Tennessee was it was more of a Union post. It wasn't a Confederacy. And Tennessee was pretty split during the Civil War. And so what ended up happening was him and his brother Charter decided that they were going to join the Union Army. And my understanding is that they provided their own horses. So the government gave them a stipend for doing that.
Yeah.
Matthias and Charter took their stipends and combined them and purchased a parcel of property where they said they wanted to do two things. They wanted to build a church where their family could worship, and they wanted to build a cemetery where their descendants could be buried. And that church is still in existence today in Strawberry Plains, known as Pratt's Chapel Baptist Church. And my understanding historically is that's how the foundation of that church was brought about. Yeah. And so I love the story because it kind of speaks of, you know, David had Matthias, and Matthias had a son by the name of Samuel Boyd, and Samuel Boyd had a son by the name of Claude Anderson, who had Vernon Claude, who had Mark Anthony, who was my dad.
Right.
And so I was trying to show you may never know your descendants 2, 3, 4, 5 generations down the road, but the decisions that you and I as men are making today will have huge ramifications on both our children and our children's children.
Man, that's great. That's great. And we're going to link to that message. Is it anywhere other than Facebook? Just so I know.
It should be on YouTube.
YouTube as well. Yeah. What I may do is I may link to the YouTube page instead of the Facebook, may do both of those. But Reggie, what did you think about the message? Did you get a chance to listen to that?
Oh, I do. I've told you before, Jamie, I go and I'll pull some of your messages and listen and stuff like that. What folks may not understand is me and Justin or Ken were cousins, and I was there. We grew up in the same church at Valley View Baptist Church. I was there when Justin got saved. I was there when Justin announced his call to preach. For a couple of years, I believe, when Justin traveled to go to churches and preach, I was riding along with him. Scared me to death because that dude drives crazy. I believe Justin, I heard a message. I was listening to a message. I listen to Justin's preaching all the time too. I'll be sitting at home working and I'll pull Clear Springs up and listen to a morning service or something. But I think it was yesterday, day before yesterday, I was listening to him preach a message, and he was, I believe it was me.
We went to Georgia and got caught in a snowstorm.
Yeah. And he was telling that story. We got caught in a snowstorm. Buddy, we were scared to death.
Hold on. You got caught in a snowstorm in Georgia?
We were coming back from Georgia, and the preacher had given us a back way because he said it was quicker, which put us up in Cherokee, North Carolina.
Yeah.
So we were supposed to come out in Gatlinburg, and it was in January, and we didn't know where we were. The snow was piled up, and there was a third wheel with us. It might have been Chad Presley.
Yeah, I think it was. And we had to pull over at a gas station, man. And I'm talking
and
about –
And I elaborated that story to obviously make it a lot more fun, but we did end up behind a tractor trailer that showed us the way out of there.
Yeah, he did. But it was kind of – it was scary, though. It was middle – I mean, it was late. It was late at night, and it was –
Felt like a Michael Myers moment.
Yeah. Oh, my. Didn't we – if I'm not mistaken, we also – somebody said a joke. I think it was either you or Chad. One said something about, you know – wouldn't it be crazy if somebody jumped out of the woods on us as a ride? Because we had to go slow through the mountains.
Yeah.
And somebody jumped out, and I was like, listen, I was making sure the doors are locked. I was like, nah, I ain't doing this. Justin, I know, you know, our podcast is we call it Southern Gospel Point of View. And I know we grew up listening to old Southern gospel music. You know, we grew up at Valley View, and we've heard some, you know, I remember Conrad Cook and the Calvary Echoes, the Supernals coming, stuff of that nature. But since you've been pastoring, you've had Southern gospel groups come to your church and things of that nature. But let me ask, I want to ask, because I remember we went to, I think it was Speedwell, and there was a bluegrass group up there. Remember, we got to see, you got a bunch of their CDs at one time.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And, and I know we always like bluegrass gospel and stuff like that. But is there a group, a Southern gospel group that you go, man, they've got it, and they're like, you know, they're your favorite. Do you have a favorite group, a Southern gospel group?
Yeah, man. Listen, I've got a lot. Matter of fact, this weekend we have Joseph Habedank with us this coming Sunday night, and I'm a huge fan of Joseph Habedank. But honestly, if you put me in any setting, I would as soon be with the Mylon Hayes family as any group that's out there. I love Mylon Hayes. You know, listen, I'll be honest. I love all kinds of Christian music. If it's built on truth, it doesn't matter to me 8 years ago, but there's something about that old shape note singing that I just absolutely love. I grew up on the old Redback Kindle, obviously, so I've just got an indwelt passion for that. And I think Mylon Hayes family does one of the best jobs singing those old Redback hymnals and doing it with the touch of God, while at the same time doing it with such skill. Mm-hmm. And there's a balance there. I mean, there's a balance between having God's favor and touch and then and doing it the right way. And I think Mylon Hayes probably does that as well as anybody. I was in Georgia, ironically, Pickett's Mill just not long ago, and preaching down there, and the Mylon Hayes family was singing. And so I would say Mylon Hayes would be my favorite.
Who all have you had at your church? You're fixing to have Joseph. I know you've had the 11th hour.
Let me
hour.
Go back and think on this. So we've had Joseph Habedank multiple times. Our church loves Joseph, love his testimony. We have had the Browders. They've sang for us. They did a Christmas show a few years ago. We have had, let's see, obviously we've had Mylon Hayes family. We just recently, back in September, we had, I'm going to draw some blanks and y'all going to have to help me. We had, come on.
I know you had 11th hour.
Oh, yeah, I do Israel with 11th hour. So I love 11th hour. We go to Israel together. We've had 11th hour. I'm thinking of the family from Georgia that went to brother, they attended Pastor Sammy Allen's church, the three girls, the sisters. Oh. No, not sisters. The dad of three daughters.
The Morrison sisters?
The Morrison sisters. Yeah. I was blank. Yeah. I love the Morrison sisters. And my church loves them. My church absolutely loves them. And then we've also had Jim Brady and his group. They've been with us. Great.
Jim Brady Trio. Yeah.
I don't do a lot of concerts anymore. No reason. I just hadn't done a ton of them. Obviously, we still do them. We got one coming up this weekend. But those are a few of the groups that we've had. Really, really good groups.
So I think there's two groups that come to my mind, two groups of people that if you have one, it's very likely you'll be overran with questions about having more. That's missionaries and singing groups. Would you agree with that, Justin?
Oh, 100%.
100%.
Listen, I'm going to be straight honest with you. Part of my, and I get it. Look, I'm saying this, and I know I'm on a Southern Gospel Point of View radio broadcast, but as a pastor, I hate dealing with booking agents. Yeah. I just don't like it. I don't enjoy it.
I'm the same way.
But I get it. I get it. It's part of it. And so part of my, we have a full-time music minister, and I literally push it all off on him now and let him, I just say, look, I'd like to have this group. You handle all of the processes. And I get it, man. You know, I grew up in a church where, like, if groups, and I hope I'm okay saying this, if they stuck prices on it, my pastor wasn't interested.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But now that I am a pastor, I get it. These people are making a living.
Right.
Here's a fine line. It's a fine line. You know, I'm not probably going to have a group that's going to say, yeah, there's a price tag of $10,000.
Right.
But I get it. They're trying to make a living. And so, you know, part of me kind of being standoffish is I don't like dealing with the hustle and bustle of all of the contracts and all of the stuff that goes with it. But I understand it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, can I add this?
Yeah.
I'm sure there are churches that have fully taken advantage of these people and they've got extremely burned.
Oh, yeah.
That's why they have to do it. So I get it.
Yeah. You know, we're hours away from everything. You know, I mean, our closest big city is Albany, Georgia, and it's about 45 minutes away. But even still, you know, to get to that, you know, it's going to take you a little while to get there. But with that said, if there's any groups, you know, Southern Gospel groups that come around, it's usually like a Friday night or a Saturday night in between larger concerts. And so the churches that have booked those, they're typically fairly small as well. And so they don't have to deal with the contract side of things. They just, hey, you know, we're going from just say a Wednesday or a Thursday night concert in Atlanta, and we're going to Jacksonville on Sunday morning. Can we stop by there Saturday night? You know, and, you know, they get a love offering or, you know, something like that.
Which is 99% what I deal with here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'll just catch somebody that's passing through and say, yes, I'd love to have you. Or unfortunately, it just doesn't work out right now.
Right. Right. And, you know, I'm good with that. I wish we lived in an area that you could bring these groups in, maybe even multiple groups at one time, and it really be worth their time. But, you know, you think of the Collingsworth family, there's like 21 or 25 of them that travel full time. They've got three full size buses, you know, a church our size, which, you know, an average attendance is maybe 60 or so. They can't really, you know, make it worth their while to come, you know, with thousands of dollars worth of diesel, you know, 2 hours off the interstate or something like that. So I have tried my best to in this industry to maintain the role of a podcaster or a radio show host. But if they ever go to my Facebook, they will quickly realize that I'm also a pastor of a church. And man, those phone calls start coming. I'm like, nope. I'll have you on the show, but I can't do all that. It's crazy. And it's like there's a network, and I'm sure there is, you know, it just kind of constantly, builds upon itself. You mentioned the Mylon Hayes family. We just saw them Friday night at the hymn sing at Joe Arthur's church. You know Joe Arthur?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, he had them, kind of one of those things in between Arkansas.
Is that Gerald Wolf's?
Yes.
See, that's something I would love to host here one day.
That's what I was getting to. I mean, I've never been to your church, but I assume it's a fairly good-sized church.
We just put out overflow chairs. Currently, right now, we can seat about 1,300.
Man, that would be awesome. So what's holding you back?
You know, actually, honestly, we've sent an email once before, and we didn't hear back from it. Mm. And I probably just need to follow up on it again.
Oh, that would be great. Especially if you know some of those groups already.
Yeah.
I think it'd be wonderful.
We've also had the one that I didn't mention a while ago is the I'm going blank on all of these groups, but outside the Mylon Hayes family, we've had the keep talking. It'll come to me in a minute.
Okay. All right. So you've had 11th Hour, the Browders, Joseph Habedank. You've had multiple times, I think you said, the Mylon Hayes family. Jim Brady Trio as well.
Jim Brady Trio. They were here right when I first came.
Now, you know, Jim Brady is back with the Booth Brothers. Have you had any inkling of having the Booth Brothers come?
I'll be honest with you. I didn't even know he was back with them because I just listen 99.9% of the time. If I'm driving down the road, I'm listening to one of two things. I'm listening to sports talk, or I'm listening to podcasts, whether that's preaching or whether that's, very seldom do I listen to music. And I know that sounds crazy. My wife laughs at me and she's like, I don't know how you do it because I'm a history nut. So I listen to history. I'm on like episode 297 of a 395 episode of Civil War history right now.
Oh, good. And a podcast.
So I just, any extra chance that I have to listen, I'm infiltrating my brain with stuff that I think will help me in the ministry or in a sermon.
Yeah.
And I don't listen to a ton of music.
Right. Yeah. I run into that a lot with a lot of the preachers that I know. And, you know, they'll say things like, well, I don't listen to music. I listen to preaching, or I listen to a podcast, or I just meditate during that time. And maybe it's just me. You know, I grew up on listening to music, and it's kind of in me, you know. I sing, my family sings. And so I think that's why, because I have to be listening to something. And with my family in the car, it's easier to listen to music than it is to preaching. Because
trust me, my kids are constantly, can we please turn preaching off? We hear you all the time.
Well, you know, for me, it's like nobody wants to talk until I hit play. And when I hit play, they're talking about things that happened 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And they're bringing up stuff that their grandma said, and she's been dead for 40 years. And I'm thinking, why can't I just listen for a minute?
I'm also in a unique spot where I literally live 3 minutes from the church. So even when we are in the car as a family, it's such a short ride. And if I'm traveling, because my kids are in school, 90% of the time they're not with me. So
okay.
When I jump in the car and take off to preach somewhere or traveling, I'm usually listening to preaching or a podcast. You know, a lot of great podcasts that I listen to, podcasts referring to men. That's a passion that I have. Right now, we're trying to build a young adults ministry. So I'm listening to some podcasts that's built around the issues that young adults are fighting and dealing with, just trying to prepare my heart. And so, you know, and by the way, I thought of it, the Wisnitz. We've had the Wisnitz twice here at Clear Springs.
Okay. Let me ask you this. I think Reggie's got something, and maybe you can think about this and we can come back. But what are some podcasts that you would recommend to our listeners? It does not have to be Southern Gospel. I mean, it could be anything. And then what are some preachers that you kind of surround yourself with? Just in life, but also some that you might recommend.
Sure. So let's start with the latter. We'll talk about preachers for a minute. Now, you got to know something about me, and I would not, what I personally do, Jamie, I wouldn't advise a young Christian to do, but I could advise a pastor to do. I listen to a large range of preaching, and I do that on purpose. Sometimes I listen to preaching that I know I'm not going to line up everything doctrinally with, but I listen, and it's going to sound crazy, Listen, I'm like a lawyer, a doctor, anything else, a carpenter. I want to perfect my craft. I want to be as good at it as I can possibly be. So I will listen to preachers that I am probably not going to line up with doctrinally on a lot of things. But I'm listening at voice reflections. I'm listening to tone. I'm listening to the balance between humor, history, and truth. And so, obviously, I'm listening to guys like Joe Author. I'm listening to guys that I grew up listening to my whole life that I can find on a podcast setting. I go back and I listen to old preaching. I'm listening to guys that are Southern Baptist guys like Adrian Rogers and David Jeremiah. And I've been listening to a repertoire of W.A. Criswell from Dallas, Texas from years ago. I listen to independent guys. I listen to sermons that Jack Hiles preached back in the 1960s and 70s. I listen to guys that are a little more. This morning on my TV in my office, I was listening to Robert Jeffers out of the First Baptist Dallas. And then I listen to some Church of God guys, which I know doctrinally I'm not going to agree with them on everything. But I listen to guys that he's not Church of God, but I listen to like Jensen Franklin out of Atlanta. I listen to
what is he, by the way?
He is
would he be like non-denominational? Mistaken,
no, he's not non-denominational. He is give me a minute and I'll tell you. They go by an abbreviation, like it'll come to me in a minute.
Okay.
Let me think on it for a second. It'll come to me. He's not Church of God. He is, I don't know. I'll come to it.
Sounds good.
But regarding podcasts, let me go to the podcast. Regarding podcasts, I have a history podcast that I listen to, and it's literally called American History Tellers. And you can listen to, if you're a history nut, I'm listening to American Revolution, the Georgetown era, the inception of America, how all of that came to be, what led up to the Revolutionary War between the Americans and the Britons and what that looked like, and all the way into the signing of the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution. I think those things are important for me to know as an American. I've got another one that I'm listening to on the Civil War. It's very long. It's like 20-minute episodes. That's just history rich on the Civil War. There's a great podcast called Dad Tired and Loving It. I don't know anything about Jared Lopez other than I found a recommendation on a book. He's out of the West Coast. He's a pastor. I don't even know where he is doctrinally, but I agree with everything he is preaching and teaching about fatherhood. And that is that a father is to be the absolute leader of his home. He is to be the presenter of the gospel to his family. The greatest way to present the gospel to your kids is to start by loving your spouse.
Wow.
And it was life-changing. And then probably one of my favorite ones is a podcast that's just simply called The Better Man Podcast.
Okay.
It's by Robert Lewis. He's out of Dallas, Texas. He wrote The Better Man Curriculum. And it deals with subjects such as men who have father wounds, guys that grew up without a dad. Mm-hmm. Maybe dad was in the home, but dad was not a spiritual leader. And how that takes its toll on men. And, you know, basically the primary idea is a good man lives his life today in a way that he hopes somehow affects tomorrow. So I listen to a lot of podcasts pertaining to men. And then the last one is I'm currently listening to a podcast from a guy by the name of J.P. Pakluta. And that podcast is dealing exclusively with the single adults in America. They're leaving the church by the droves. And what do we need to do as churches to try to keep them in the church? Obviously, it's not compromising convictions. And by the way, that generation is not looking for smoking lights. They're not looking for a stool-sitting preacher. They're just looking for something that's genuine and real.
Real. That's right.
And when they find something that's genuine and real, and then they find, I think this is a key, they find other young adults their age to do it with them, they're drawn to that. And, you know, we would be considered here a traditional church. We preach the old-fashioned way. We're a King James church. We do it the way we did when we grew up, but we also, you know, we have screens. We do some things outside the box, and we're trying to minister to everybody. And so those are just a few of the podcasts. I love anything by Tom Rainer. I listen to a ton of Rainer on Leadership. So Tom Rainer gives some really good stuff. And man, I'm a little bit everywhere, to be honest with you. I'm everywhere. I have a wide range of stuff that I love.
I got you. I got you. Reggie, what you got for Dr. Pratt?
He was talking sports a minute ago, and I was going to bring some. I'll ask that later, because right now I watched you preach, and I've watched a few of the things that went on with Better Man, and it helped. I'm just being honest with you. I didn't go to Justin's church, but that whole thing was helping me, and I wasn't even there for the whole thing, and just what he was talking about preaching wise, that it was tremendous. Justin, I know your dad and your papa we grew up in church. Your dad's he was a deacon or trustee at Valley View, right?
He was a deacon, yes, sir.
That's right. Okay. And your mom's been there. She's done things. So you've been raised in church. I've been raised in church. So we don't have that whole, my mom and dad took me to Valley View growing up, and your mom and dad took you. But let me ask you this, for the Better Man series that you all did, what is one thing that you saw that you learned maybe coming out of Better Man that stuck with you and said, wow, this even opened my eyes? Is there anything that popped out that just said that you learned from this whole Better Man experience?
I'm going to go with two. I'm going to say, first of all, how prevalent the passivity of biblical manhood, spiritually led men.
Mm-hmm.
Take the average church, even my church. And the reason we did Better Man, and I told my church this openly, I'm not saying anything on this podcast behind their backs that I didn't say from a pulpit to their face. We have a lot of good men. We do not have a lot of good men who lead.
Yeah.
Their families or in this church. We have a large vacation Bible school. This past year, we hit our all-time record, and we averaged in vacation Bible school 948 kids a night. That takes a lot of volunteers.
Yeah.
It takes about 260 volunteers. When you break that volunteer list down, it comes out with something like this. We average out of 260 volunteers, about 200 ladies, 190 ladies, and maybe 70, 80 men. Wow. And so they almost triple the men that step up and lead during that time. And what kids need is not, God didn't design. Look, I'm thankful for women. We're all thankful for our wives and the role that they play. God gave them to us as a helpmate. Right. But at the end of the day, the reality is this, and I'm so passionate about this. God called men to lead. And when Adam failed as a leader in Genesis chapter 3, when he didn't step up and say, Eve, wait, God said no to this. We're not going to do this. When Adam failed to be a Joshua, as for me and our house, we're going to serve the Lord. It sent the entire world into a tailspin. And so my belief is, coming out of Better Man, is I never even realized myself how in depth the passivity of men are. We sit on the seat of do nothing, and we let our wives often lead in areas they weren't meant to lead. The second thing that I would say is that even guys that grew up in good homes, which would be me, which would be you guys, we still have dad wounds that we don't recognize. So Better Man, I got to say this quick because I don't want to dominate the conversation. Better Man is 35 to 40 minutes of me teaching on certain principles about biblical masculinity. And then it's 55 minutes of men gathering in small groups of 8 to 10 men, and they discuss what was taught in the large group. So it's split in two. It's almost like a miniature Sunday school after a sermon. And we did it on Monday nights. So I had a group of 10 men that I led. And in my group, I was blown away. I've got one that hasn't talked to his dad in over 3 or 4 years. They had a squabble, fell out. Since Better Man happened, as of last Saturday, they resolved the squabble. They have a relationship again, and they're mending and they're growing. Had another guy that didn't know his biological dad. Had another guy whose dad died. And by the way, all of these guys that I've just described were either, and this is honest truth, God is my witness, they either spent a stint in jail, wound up on drugs, away from God. Our relationship with our earthly father has a direct relationship on how we feel about the heavenly father. And that's when exactly. That relationship breaks down between a man and his children, it affects them spiritually in the future. And it even happens when you have a good dad. So they asked me, all of my guys, most of them had dad wounds that were serious dad wounds. And I never thought I had a dad wound. I had a hardworking dad that was a deacon of a Baptist church that took us to church 3 times a week. And they said, what's your dad wound? And man, I was taken back. And I said, my dad wound. And I thought about it. And I said, you know, and I shared this with my own dad. My dad wound is that my dad did the best with what he had. But if I had a dad wound, it would be this. Early on, my dad connected me to probably more religion than he did relationship with Jesus. In other words, wow. What I mean by that, he told me a lot of things that I was not going to do and that I was going to do mm-hmm. without ever sitting me down and telling me from the scripture why I wasn't going to do them.
That's right.
So I knew there were rules that I had, but I never really knew why those rules were in place.
Yeah.
And I look at that as a possible dad wound because it's not enough for me to demand through dictatorship for my kids to not do certain things without actually scripturally teaching them why I don't want them to do those things.
That's great.
So you've took that, your dad wound, and turned it around for your children.
100%, which should be all of our goals is to right. where our dads failed, make sure that we don't can repeat that same pattern, which by the way is biblical. It's why Jesus and the apostles and the prophets continually said all throughout the Bible that if a man loses his children, you run the risk of losing that for 2 to 3 generations.
Right. Right. Wow. See, I'm telling you, I have the same rule. I mean, you know, we have rules, you know, and I don't do what you're talking. I don't. I'm just being honest. I don't. I just say, hey, here's the rule. Don't break it. But after watching that and then speaking to you now, I have to change that. I have to change. Okay. Yeah. We don't believe this, or we don't do this, or you're not going to do this because of this. And it has to, I guess what you're saying, it needs to alternate.
And I would add, I don't know your all situation and what y'all do. I really don't. I've chosen at this particular season in our life to allow my children to go to public school. And I would say to the listeners that are allowing their children to go to public school. Now, we're blessed to live in the South. Obviously, we're blessed to live in places like Georgia and Tennessee. Right. But I would say to people that are choosing to allow their children to go to public school, you have to even do this even stronger, because yeah. what I'm teaching my children in church and as a father is often in direct opposition to what they're learning in the public setting.
That's right.
So as a dad, I have to work overtime making sure. I just can't tell my daughter, you know, no, you're not going to spend the night with certain girls or certain people. I have to explain biblically, here's why, because that culture is not conducive to what I'm teaching you. And, you know, without going into the details, it could be as simple as, you know, that young lady openly admits that she has homosexual tendencies. Mm-hmm. I need to show you from scripture why I believe that's wrong. You can be her friend, and it's your job to love her as a human, but we're not going to get into a system where we allow you, while you're under our leadership, I'm going to show you from scripture why we don't believe that way. So we love the sinner, but we're not in agreement with the sin.
Right.
And I could just say, nope, you're not spending the night. Mm-hmm. But then she's totally confused as to why that's the case. Or no, you're not hanging out with that crowd.
Right.
But she doesn't know why I'm telling her she can't. So I'm trying to go that one step further so that she's prepared to do the same thing with my grandchildren one day if the Lord tarries is coming.
That's good. The thing to think about in public school, now I homeschool my kids, and mainly because the public schools here in my county, they are not good academically.
Understood.
But I mean, in multiple facets, they are not good. Now, I think the reason why we have to be doubly on point in what you're saying is because they spend 7 to 8 hours a day at school, and they may only spend 4 hours together with mom and daddy in the evenings, and then they got to go to bed, and they do that five times a week. Yeah. And they do that five times a week. So you finally get whole days, unless they're tied up in sports and things of that sort. Being in the ministry, dad's in the ministry. Like, that's one reason why I was running late today, because of some things that I had to do for some folks this morning, that takes away even from family time. And so even with Saturday and Sunday, if you had them all day long, that really still doesn't quite make up for all day them being out in the world, if you will. And I'm not bashing public school by any means, but men have to be men of God. Now, you know, Brother Justin and Reggie, that years ago when someone said he's a man of God, they were talking solely about a preacher, a pastor, an evangelist, a missionary, something like that. But I think in this day, we have to be not just godly men, but men of God. And in doing that, and I've got a follow-up question about something that you said as well, we have to take control of the spiritual health of our family. And that is going to take, probably, if you've never been that, that's going to take making some people mad. There may be some uneasy conversations with the wife, with the children. But if we're all praying and we're all trying to live a Christian life, a godly life, then I think those conversations may even, I said uneasy, they may actually be welcomed, because I think there's a lot of ladies, wives, mothers that are having to be the spiritual head of their house because the husband won't. But if he ever steps up and he does that, I almost believe there may be a sigh of relief. Would you agree with that?
I would, having lived this for the last 2.5 months of my life, I will tell you it's not a maybe, it's an absolute. If a man steps up and takes the spiritual leadership in his home, his wife is going to be so drawn to that most of the time, if she's spiritual.
Yes.
Now, that's the key. There's a reciprocal effect in Ephesians. Husbands, love your wives even as Christ loved the church. What is that? That's sacrificial love. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to sacrifice? And here's the deal. And this was, I learned this premise from Jared Lopez's book on Dad Tired and Loving It. And it was simply this: when the devil showed up to Eve in the garden, what he done was he attacked Eve. He didn't attack Adam. He attacked Eve as the weaker vessel. And where did he attack her? Here's where he attacked her. There is more fulfillment outside of what God has given you.
Wow.
There's more fulfillment. God is holding back things that you could enjoy, but you're choosing not to.
Mm-hmm.
And so Eve has this mindset that, man, there's something more. And look, your wife, my wife, Reggie's wife, every wife is facing those same battles today. The serpent is still going to our wives and saying, look, there's more. If you were only skinnier, if you were only a better mom, if you were only prettier. And when a man doesn't step up in that moment and reaffirm to his wife, you're the most amazing woman I've ever met. You're the most beautiful lady that I've ever laid eyes on. You're the most amazing mother to our children that God could have ever given them. Then she's going to, if a man's not doing that, she's going to start taking her cues from somewhere else. And she's going to wander down a beaten path. Which leads to divorce. It leads to separation. And so what I believe the reciprocal effect is, if a man would sacrifice his pride and his arrogance and his sports and his hunting and the things he loves and be a man and love his wife and build his wife, then guess what? She won't have a problem doing. Wife, submit yourselves unto your husband.
Yep.
So when a man doesn't, here's what happens. When a man doesn't show his wife love, she doesn't show him respect.
That's right.
When she doesn't show him respect, he doesn't show her love.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's when we break that cycle, it fixes the home.
Yeah.
And so I would say to any man listening to this, if you'll step up to the plate and your wife has this much spirituality in her, she will say, oh, my Lord, what happened to my husband? Because this isn't him. Where did he come from? Jamie, I could literally know. I mean, matter of fact, I've got them. These are cards from ladies at my church that have come in the mail over the last 2 or 3 weeks, simply saying, thank you for building, because this ain't the same guy. I don't know where he come from. This ain't the same man 3 months ago. And that wasn't my doing. Seriously, that was God's doings. That was the Lord.
Yeah.
So had a 16-year-old girl, Bible in my hand. I wouldn't lie to you. 16-year-old girl come up to me in our foyer weeping and said, listen, I can't thank you enough for what you've done and your vision for Better Man at our church, because my mom and I sat last night on our swing porch and we cried because we don't have the same dad and the same husband that was here months ago. We don't know what happened, but God's done something. So they're drawn to it, man. It's like a magnet. It's like a magnet when a man will step up and lead. So it's not perhaps, I honestly think it's an absolute, they will follow if they love the Lord. They're looking for it.
That's great. Now I'm looking on YouTube right now. And you said you did the Better Man on Mondays.
Monday nights. Right? Yes, sir.
I don't see that on here. Do you have that on any like audio or anything like that?
We do. So let me tell you what Better Man is. So Better Man is not my program. I didn't write it.
Oh, okay.
It's Robert Lewis's program.
Okay.
Quick story. I was preaching in Granger County back in the month of March. I got off on a tangent in that sermon about men. I met a guy by the name of Keith Boggs, who, by the way, has a podcast called Real Momentum. He lives in Granger County. He's from Georgia. And Keith introduced me. He said, listen, I can tell you got a heart for men and families. I want to introduce you to something. We went and sat down, had lunch, and it was Mexican. So God was all in it.
Hey,
and
man.
We had lunch and he said, I want to show you a program, pray over it. You know, so I started digging through Better Man. This is Better Man right here, just to kind of give you a look of it. And basically this was my teaching material. And so I've got marks and things in it. But basically what Better Man is everybody got this notebook. And for example,
all of your men or everyone in the church.
So what we've done, Jamie, there's so much of this, and I really don't want to try to take up too much time with it. But what we done is we on Father's Day. So I went from March into June with my staff kind of going through it.
Okay.
They bought in. So my music minister, my youth pastor, my children's pastor, they bought into it. And then I went to my deacons. So March, April, May, June. So there's like a 3 or 4 month period. I go to my deacons, share the information with them. And then I basically said, here's the deal. I need 40 leaders. I have 15 deacons. I have 5 staff members. So I had 21 guys already. I said, I got to get 20 other men. I said, I want y'all to give me recommendations on men that you think are head and shoulders above everybody else. By the time it's done, I got 40 men. I got those 40 men together at a leadership meeting. And I said, here's what I want. God's given me a heart to reach the men of our church. I believe you guys are the ones to reach the men of our church, because you're going to realize you're not perfect men. I'm not a perfect man, but you're doing it better than most men are.
Yeah.
And so what I did was completely different concept. I said, I want you to start recruiting, and I want you to specifically recruit 8 men that will commit to going through a program with you for 10 weeks. Hmm. So it was almost, I pitched it to him like this. I said, it's almost like a college football coach.
Yeah.
Go out, get men at the church that you have a burden for. And I want you to go say, listen, I want you to commit to 10 weeks with me on Monday nights. Pastor's going to preach, then we're going to sit down and talk about what he preached. So they got out, started working it. My fear was, what happens if you are a member of my church? Jamie Burke's a member of my church. What if one of those 40 men happened to not ask you for some reason?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So my fear was, I don't want any man to feel left out. So we opened a registration portal. So then we started announcing there's recruitment happening. But if you're not recruited, go to our website, get on the registration portal and log in and be a part of this. It ended up being 60 men that got on there and registered. I was praying for 60 men. I got 60 men on the registration portal. By the time my 40 men recruited, we ended up with 211 men in this program. So we started in August. We started strategically the Monday after school went back. And we met on Monday nights. We had a 10-minute time of what we called man worship, where we just sang some songs together. By the way, nothing more powerful than 200 men singing and praising Jesus together.
Yeah.
No distraction of kids. No worrying about what our wife will think if we raise our hand in church. Just 200 men singing and worshiping Jesus. it was amazing.
That's awesome.
So then we start the program, 10 minutes of man worship. Then I preach for 35 to 40 minutes, which was the hardest thing for me, was to stay within that time frame.
Yeah.
And then once it was done, we broke up and we went to Sunday school classes and we had tables and we sat at the table and we worked through this book together. And what's interesting, so session one was about manhood today. And basically what manhood today is statistics on biblical masculinity. What do men think about the Bible? Where are men at in this day and age? What does the world define as manhood? Texas family and earn honest keep. That's only part of manhood. That's like a small, minute part of manhood. And so then we start looking back and unpacking. Let's get your dad wins out. Let's figure out what is keeping you from being who you ought to be today. And you'll discover that most men are not today because of something that happened to them yesterday, last month, or when they were 10 years old. Had a man in our church literally come up and say, my dad died 21 years ago. His ashes are sitting on my mantle at home in an urn. He wanted them spread out in a certain stream that he grew up in. And they're sitting there because he said, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm ticked off at my dad because he wasn't there. And he said, I cannot be who God wants me to be until I forgive my dad. And he said, last night I stood at the mantle and asked for my dad's ashes to give me forgiveness. And I'm taking them this weekend and spreading them. And I'm moving forward. Wow. So cool stories. I mean, you really don't realize how that happens and how that works. And so then you get down to identifying really what biblical manhood is. And it's as simple as this, Jamie. It's built on four premises. Real men courageously follow God's word. Number two, real men love and protect God's woman. So you got the word, you got the woman. Number three, real men excel at God's work. Most men think they can only serve Jesus on Sundays.
Right.
What if I told you the greatest place to serve Jesus as a man was when you clocked in tomorrow morning?
That's right.
What if the guy sitting in the cubicle beside you or the sawmill beside you or in the manhole with the local utility power company you work for, what if you were a Christian 365 days a year and they begin to see something in you at work? So real men excel at God's work. They go out and they serve Jesus Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, not just on the Lord's Day or a Wednesday night. That's what real men do. And then the last one is real men better God's world. And how is the best way for a man to better God's world? Is by doing it through his children. Because I'm only, you know, I gave a statistic, and I'm trying to remember the statistic on the last week of Better Man, how that in 2085, I'm not going to be here.
Right.
You're not going to be here. Reggie's not going to be here. But you know who is going to be here? Asher.
Mm-hmm.
My son. So how's the best way for me to build a legacy? Through my children. Because everything that's remembered by Justin Pratt in 2085 is going to be remembered through the legacy that I gave my family. Yeah. And so the greatest way for us to build a legacy and to reach the world is to let's start in our own homes. And so better men, they better God's world by reaching the next generation, starting under their roof. And so you've got the world. You've got the, I don't have one in here. I don't think I was going to show it to you. We gave out for everybody that completed the program. We gave out what was called a challenge coin and it had a Better Men logo and it just simply had four words, word, woman, work and world. And we reminded our men, carry those in your pocket every day, work to love God's word, love the woman that God gave you, protect her. Work through your children and work at your secular workplace. And that's kind of how Better Men work.
Okay. All right. Reggie?
Just two things. Number one, when are you going to do that again? Because I'm in. You let it, if you're going to do it again, I'm there. Because you're not far from me and I would do it in a heartbeat because that's something that, right now, that's I need, you know, for me and my family, for my Lord, for my world, I need that. And number two, is it possible to get a copy of one of those books?
Sure. So you can go, and I don't think I ever answered your question, Jamie. I'm sorry. We didn't record, we recorded Better Man, but we didn't live stream it because my fear was that our men would try to skip the sessions catch it online. But what I did was I had our tech team record it, and we're in the process of putting it on a jump drive, like all of the large group sessions.
Okay.
Reggie, my recommendation would be when we get the jump drive done, let me get a workbook and a jump drive in your hand. You go through it, and then you go to your pastor and say, why don't we look into doing this Better Man session at our church? Why don't we enlist men at our church? And look, I'm not a promoter for Better Man. I don't get money off Better Man, but this thing has been life-changing for me and for our church. Now, I will say this. I think it begins with the burden of a pastor. And if a pastor didn't have a burden and he's just half-heartedly doing it, it's not going to be effective. But what you can do is you can go to betterman.com and you can get videos. You can get – they have teaching there. It's not the teaching that I'm accustomed to. Right. And what I mean by that is it's a – I'm driven when the type of preaching I enjoy is expositional, expository, take a text, work through verse 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 and get God's truth out of it. This is very practical. It's very practical. And so I had to get out of my comfort zone to teach through this because it's a lot of throwing out statistics and let's talk about where men are today. But that's what men need. And then I would try to drive home a spiritual truth constantly. And so, you know, everybody that I knew that did Better Man before said, look, the first 3 or 4 weeks are going to be hard because you're talking a lot about the past and you're living in these dad wounds. But man, by the time you get to week 5 and 6, get ready and buckle up because that thing's like a rocket taking off.
Yeah.
So I could get you a jump drive of the ones that I taught and get a workbook in your hand and you could sit down in your own time and do it. But my recommendation would be once you look at it, go to many and listen, there's churches that do this with 5 and 10 guys. It doesn't have to be 200 right. men.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, we're just, and know my heart when I say this, we're just a bigger church. And so we were blessed to have a group like that, but this is just as good for a church with 60 people who have 5 or 6 guys that go through it.
Right.
It's revolutionary for any church, honestly.
Well, I'll get with you to get the jump drive and the book. And yes, I think it would be perfect for our church too. Cause we do have, a couple of new men in our church and they're younger than I am, but they just got saved. One guy, he's a younger guy. He was on drugs real bad. He got saved and not too long ago, he just announced his call to preach.
Yeah.
And I think it would be something that our church needs. And so, yeah, I will get with you. And if you can get me a jump drive in that book and I can sit down with my pastor and go, hey, what about doing something like this?
Sure. There is a, you remember when David told Solomon, he said, listen, I go the way of all the earth. Interpretation, I'm about to die.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives him his last will and testament. And when Solomon is standing there over the deathbed of David, the last thing David ever says to his son, he doesn't say anything about building a church. He doesn't say anything about building an empire. He doesn't say anything about accumulating material wealth. And Solomon did all of that. But here's what he said to his son. He said, show thyself a man.
Yeah.
Solomon, if there's anything that you can do in your life, prove that you're a man. Go be a man. Go live out what God has destined you to be. So, you know, I know I keep coming back to the man thing on a Southern gospel point of view, but at the end of the day, if men don't get, as goes men, as goes our culture.
That's right.
Right. Right. Exactly. All right. Well, man, I appreciate the stuff that you've shared with us as far as the Better Man program. I know that that a lot of men got a lot of help there. That's phenomenal. We're going to switch gears just a little bit. But I do want to ask you about, SEC, my friend.
Hold on. This is switching gears a lot.
Yeah. This is switching gears a lot. I know I go from one thing to the other, you know me, Jamie, I always go. but I don't know how long that's time he's got, so I didn't know. But I went to the Akron, Tennessee football game, and I saw my old cuz on the football field in white, and it had SEC road on it. And I'll let you tell our listeners, yeah, but what's your job down there at the old Tennessee football? I think he's froze.
Years ago, I was invited to be a chain puller. And so I keep the chains on the sidelines on the home games for Tennessee.
That is awesome.
Best seat in the house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I bet. I bet. And so,
especially on third down in the Alabama game.
Yes. But if you go watch that video, I was trying my best to fix it.
Man, I got so tickled because it showed you really good. And I told Lori, I said, there's Justin right there. And you could tell you were talking to this guy. Like, what is going on? What is happening? Who's right? Who's wrong?
I was saying, man, it is fourth down. But see, honestly, no lie, the referees were convinced it was third down. And oh. I was walking them through. I was like, look, first down was a run and play. Then there was a penalty. Then we threw one deep. Then we threw another one deep. And then we threw this one that was short. It was fourth down. So yeah. At least I had it right and wasn't a fool.
So you got to use all the better man stuff you can get while you're on the football field, apparently.
I don't know if standing on the sideline it makes you a better man. It tests you. It tests your better man skills.
I told my kids, we were watching the Tennessee-Kentucky game, and they were panning, and they kind of slowed down because they were doing showing us play that I believe it was a catch or something. And all of a sudden, I hear Bentley go, "Dad, that's Justin." And there you were standing right behind him. And so we get to see every once in a while. But I thought
it was a lot of fun. I enjoy doing it.
Yeah. So, now, I do know you referee high school football games.
I do. And that was kind of my gateway into this.
Yeah. Now, do you get to, I guess all of the guys that you work with know you're a pastor and a preacher. And
oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever have any conversations with the refs about church or anything?
So the truth is, I'm not around the refs a ton, the refs themselves. Okay. I'm with the other guys that run chains, but I'm with the refs for about 2 minutes, 3 minutes before the game. They're telling us what they want, what they don't want. So, no, there's not really much of a chance to evangelize. But, you know, those guys, honestly, most of them are just like you and I. They're good guys. They have jobs. They live in Auburn, Alabama, and Lexington, Kentucky, and Podunk, Georgia. And, I mean, they, you know, that's where you live. They're just good old guys. A lot of them, obviously, I'm sure some are Christians, some are not. Some are churchgoers, some are not. But, yeah, you know, I mean, I don't necessarily use it as an evangelism tool, but obviously if the opportunities present themselves, I'm always willing to talk to them about the Lord. But there's very limited opportunity to do that.
Do you have any time with the players?
Or no,
do you have to stay? Do you have to stay separate?
No, I mean, I've got an access pass, but I can't just go walking in a locker room and, you know, I mean, look, it's a secular state ran college university.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's really more just my love for sports and my enjoyment of sports. And now the guys that I work with and work for, they're all Christians. And so I'm a pastor. So there's occasional weddings and funerals that happen and they understand you know, those are priorities. And so there's been occasions where I had to do a wedding and didn't go to the football game, which I was not happy about.
Oh, I'm sure.
But when it's a family that's, hey, we got a funeral Saturday at 6 o'clock and Tennessee's at 7, I just know, like, yeah, I'm out this week. I can't do
it. Now, are you going to be there this weekend with Georgia?
No, I will not be.
Really?
No, we only do the home games. Our good friend Jonathan.
Our
good friend Jonathan McNeese was supposed to have tickets for he and I, but then when everybody started winning and they wound up being the 1 and 2, nobody wanted to give him tickets. So we're out. We were going to go together. We were going to go to the game together Saturday, and then he's preaching for me next week here at Clear Springs.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
Y'all pray for us. Next week's going to be really good for Jonathan, or it's going to be really good for me. And for the other, it's going to be bad.
Well, yeah,
I'd say you've got your hand in about anything. You're a pastor of Clear Springs. You are a referee for the SEC Tennessee football, but there's something else that you do, and it's for our community. I know you do church community things, but there's also something else that you do, and you're a chaplain for, is it Knox City or Knox County? It's Knox County.
Well, I did both, but I recently gave the city position up and stayed with the county because I tell people all the time, if Hannah ever divorces me, it's not because she doesn't love me. It's because I do too much.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I just had to, cut some things back and marginalize. And so I gave my post at the city up, but yes, I'm a chaplain for Knox County Sheriff's Office.
Yeah.
You had to practice what you preach and be a better man, right?
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
What was your question, Reggie?
You enjoy doing that. I mean, I know there's some things that, I mean, I know a lot of it's bad, but you enjoy being there for those folks, right?
No, I love it. So when I started chaplaincy work, to be honest, I got into stuff has always drawn me, but after having done it for 8 or 9 years now, to be honest with you, I started battling some side area. And now I still have to put it to the position. But what I really, really, really enjoy is I love trying to break down the barriers with police officers. Man, police officers hard shell. They don't trust nobody. People don't care about them. The media paints them out to be these animals. So hard shell. And I'm I love a good challenge. And like one of the biggest challenges in my life is trying to break down police officers. Working directly with officers and just building friendships and trying to reach them with the gospel. I mean, look, we probably had 9 police officers at church Sunday, and they're guys that didn't come here. It's just guys that I've built relationship with over the years.
Wow, that's right. Awesome. Man.
Well,
I knew you were doing that. I know you was a chaplain for one of them before. And, you know, I mean, I, if I'm not mistaken, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Don't the new recruits from the county use the church when they graduate?
They use a parking lot, what's called emergency drill. So really good account. And the sheriff is a member of our church. So we always take care of our community by allowing that. We're very, very community-based church. Very elementary school here uses our auditorium for their Christmas program. Sheriff's office uses our auditorium for their graduation. And football team uses our kitchen downstairs on Thursday nights for their middle school pregame meal. Our church goes to all the local high school games. We've done every single game this year for Gibbs High School, and we live stream. We put their game on our YouTube channel so that people that can't go are able. That was something that started during COVID, and they loved it, and we kept. So super community-oriented church. We love being involved in the community.
Well, let me ask you just one final question. And you mentioned different podcasts, different preachers, and then you mentioned having different singers and groups such as that. If you had to choose someone to listen to as far as singing, who do you think that would be? Like, if you pulled your phone up right now, who do you think you would navigate to?
My go-to, honestly, is the Lindsay family.
Okay.
That's my go-to. I've never met them. I don't know them. I think they're out of Alabama. You may know them.
But yeah.
The Lindsay family.
Have you heard the Powells and the York family?
I'm not
family?
Familiar with the Powells. I've heard of the York family, but don't know them.
Okay. I'd highly recommend either one of those. They've got a touch of God. Those four that you mentioned, the Morrisons, the Lindsays.
I went through a season of some anxiety back in 2021. I'd never been through anxiety at all. And man, it hit me out of nowhere. Things that happened, such a crime that I went on, all the guy that I knew there. It sounds silly, but the insurrection that happened when the election was going on, and all the chaos happening in America. And I just, man, I got, and the Lindsays, I came across a song that the Lindsays sung called Bring It All to Him.
Yeah.
And it became like my staple. And I would play that song like so many times throughout the day. And it became my peace in a shattered world. And I just fell in love with the Lindsays during that time.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Reggie.
Do you know, because I know your wife, Hannah, do you know her favorite song, or does she have a favorite group that she talks to you about?
She has a favorite group. She likes 11th Hour because we know them personally. We've had a lot of fun with them. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, we don't, again, if we're in the car, we normally aren't listening to music a ton.
I got you.
Our guilty pleasure is that we like old country music. So we listen to some country music every day. Don't judge me.
I'm not going to judge you. I'm not. I just, okay, somebody else judges me.
Jamie, go ahead and tell him who your favorite country singer is.
I'm not real sure what you're fixing to say. So you tell me.
I'm not saying nothing. It's you. You always talk about him.
Do tell, Jamie. I won't judge you.
I don't know.
Might be my favorite.
Who are you talking
about? Randy Travis is all he's talking about. Oh,
yeah. I love Randy Travis.
Listen, I like that old stuff. I snuck in the fair a few weeks ago. I didn't sneak in. I got in, but we went and listened to Clint Black sing some of his old music.
Oh, yeah.
I
tell you, I love it so much, Brother Justin. If I'm not careful, one will come, like I'll say a phrase when I'm preaching, and my mind starts singing it. And if the filter doesn't kick in, I'll start either singing it or quoting the lyrics. I'm like, oh, stop it. Well, listen, we're going to get out of here, but we try to do something at the close of every show. Of course, it's Southern Gospel Point of View, and we don't want to just be about music. We want to laugh. We want to have fun. But one thing that I feel like Southern gospel music is, I mean, the central term is gospel. And so we normally leave, you know, just with a quick word of the gospel. And so I wonder if you would care just to share maybe a verse or two and just get us out of here by sharing the gospel.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you a 2-minute synopsis here. I actually this morning have been spending time in Matthew chapter number 15. And if you remember the narrative in Matthew chapter 15, the Jews and the scribes have come to Jesus, and they want to know, why are your disciples, I'm going to paraphrase it, why are your disciples eating without washing their hands? And they said that Jesus responds with an interesting take. He said, why are you not keeping the commands in relation to the way that you honor your father and mother?
Mm-hmm.
And what he was basically saying is that you're trying to nitpick all of these laws. And it wasn't, you got to understand, it wasn't an idea of whether they washed their hands. It was, were they ceremonially washing their hands? They want to know if they were taking that little cup and pouring it one time on their left hand, another time on their right hand, again on the left. You know, are you washing three? Are you ceremonially keeping the traditions of our fathers? And the Pharisees' idea was this: if you don't ceremonially do certain things, then you cannot be right with God. And so why are these men calling yourselves disciples when they're not doing all these T's and dotting all these I's the way that our traditions have told us? And Jesus says, hey, listen, you need to know that it's not what goes in a man that defiles him. It's what comes out of a man's mouth that defiles him. In other words, you don't have a hand problem. You got a heart problem.
Yes.
And Jesus will obviously spend his entire ministry dealing with these Pharisees that want to connect their religion to laws and traditions and standards and do's and don'ts. And I would just conclude with the gospel like this. It's so important for us to remember, not only as preachers, but as Christians, that heaven and Christianity and faith is not built on what we do or what we don't do. It's built on what Jesus Christ done, which is the gospel, his death, his burial, and his resurrection. And so the key to all of this is that unless we continually point to, look, we got a heart issue, and our heart issue is what's going to send us to hell. And only the power of the gospel has the ability to transform and change the heart of a person. So I just have that fresh reminder today, having studied that text on what Jesus said about the human heart.
Yeah.
And it's been well said, it's not my quote, that at the heart of the human problem is the problem of the human heart.
Yeah.
But it's nothing that the gospel, the death, the burial, the blood of Jesus cannot fix for the problem of the human heart.
Amen. Amen. Well, thank you so much, Justin, for being with us. And I appreciate you just being open and sharing everything with us. It's been great. Reggie, thank you, my friend, for being part of the show today. And Reggie, you and I are going to get out of here like normal. And we're just going to wish everybody a good week. And I trust that you will give us a call, send us a text, 865-315-7996. Feel free to get on our Facebook page, leave us a message. You could email us as well, james@southerngospelpov.com, or Reggie at the same address. And we'd love to hear from you. And again, thank you both for being here. Until next time, this is James and Reggie Taylor. Together we are Southern Gospel Point of View.